Hello there and welcome along to this racing postcast. It's Monday the 4th of October. I'm Maddie Flail with you on a Monday as usual. And this week I'm joined by James Stevens, Racing Post journalist, and also David Jennings to look back on a fabulous Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe weekend. There was a big shock in the big race. We're going to look and talk all about Torquato Tasso's win, as well as the rest of the Group 1 action from Longchamp on Sunday. Also going to look ahead to the Dewhurst, which could actually involve one of Sunday's winners. So that's our highlight in the second part of the show. And we're also going to talk about fan favourite Stradivarius. What's next for him after he was defeated in the Prix de Cadran? But first up, let's review Sunday's action. And the arc has to go first. Torquato Tasso won the race for Germany at 80-1. Tarnawa in second, and the favourite eventually, Hurricane Lane, he was sent off at 3-1 in third. Adyar Godolphin's other hand in the race was back in fourth. Now, how good an arc do you think this was, DJ? Because beforehand it looked very deep, very competitive. Does a shock winner change your view on that at all?
No, I don't think so. I don't think you can say just because of the winner it was a bad arc. I think it was a very good arc, and I don't think the best horse won. I think that's simple as that. I think first of all, congratulations to yourself. Obviously, a fantastic tip on the race, 100-1 put up on Twitter. Like that's phenomenal stuff. That's once in a lifetime stuff. And you know, a brilliant shout by yourself. But I think, you know, different things contributed, I thought, to his win. Like even when you go through the sectionals, I don't think he had any splits below 12 seconds, whereas those nearest to him did. I think, obviously, you were able to point out all the different things and why he was too big of a price. And I'd imagine from your point of view, it was the most exciting race you've ever watched. And it was a funny sort of race. I hate races where afterwards, I don't think the best horses won. And that was how I felt. I got that kind of inner sinking feeling where...
Who is the best horse?
I would say potentially on the day, probably Hurricane Lane was probably the best horse in the race. I just think with conditions the way they went at Longchamp, and I have a theory on the race as well. I think not much has actually been said about this. This is just only a personal thing. I think there was this thinking that the fresh ground on the inside was going to be the quickest strip of ground. And I think Hurricane Lane and especially Tarnawa and Adair went for that strip against the far rail. And I think after the two first races, the Marcel Boussac and the Prix Jean-Luc Lagardère, I think the ground actually cut up more from those two races and made it kind of harder work on the inside rail in the arc. If you look at the races that went after the arc, you've got Rougier, like that Prix de l'Opera, like you kind of look to yourself and you say, maybe, you know, Odaria should have went quicker, maybe Irotiz Mendizabal should have went quicker, but he was absolutely tanking. And it looked like the minute he asked Odaria to quicken, her wheels were just spinning, I thought. And then Rougier and Grand Glory swooped on the outside. It was the same type of story in the Prix de la Forêt, where obviously Space Blues was by far the best horse in the race. But if you think of where Space Blues came from and where Tarnawa and Hurricane Lane were in the arc, I would say that they were probably ended up racing on the slowest of the ground. And again, it's only a personal theory. Brilliant for Germany. Fantastic. Their third winner of the race. I think they won it in 1975 and again in 2011 with Dane Dream. Very good horse who obviously on breeding and everything conditions were just cherry ripe for on the day. But you run that race 10 times, I don't think he wins it any more than once.
If I had to say to you, pick one horse out of the race for next year, would it be Hurricane Lane then?
It would probably be Adyar, to be honest with you. I think Adyar is kind of, he was one, I know you could say he got an easy lead and they absolutely crawled. And you could say in that regard that he had no excuses. But I just don't think where he was and what he was doing really suited him. I think Adyar is a proper powerful galloper, and I think an end-to-end gallop is what really suits Adyar over a mile and a half. And again, as I said, he was on that rail and I just don't think it suited him. I think it's great news obviously that Hurricane Lane and Adyar are staying in training. I think they're going to be two fantastic four-year-olds next season. But I think if you offered me to own any horse in the race, if you just said now buy any horse in the race, who would you buy? I'd buy Adyar.
You wouldn't buy the winner then.
I wouldn't buy the winner, no, but you could probably afford to buy him after, with all your winnings, I'd say.
Well, it sounds as if we won't see him again. Not confirmed yet. He has the Japan Cup as an option, so we'll wait on the next couple of days if we hear more. And indeed, will Tanawa go to the Breeders' Cup and defend her record there? We'll find out. James, all the key players came to the boil, perhaps not in the order we expected. Where does this rank among arcs that you've seen in recent years?
Yeah, I just have to say this was a really, really good arc. I mean, there is always that saying in racing where as a prize winner, you sort of question how good an arc it was. But as many, many people have said in the last 24 hours or so, all the right horses were in their sort of mix. You know, only really Snowfall, who I thought was somewhat disappointing, even though she was only sixth. I thought it was a really good race. Very interesting sort of reading Dermot Weld's comments about sort of if the ground was this and that. I sort of don't really feel that in some sense. I think the arc is a race that you can sort of expect a bit of cut in the ground. Yes, there was a lot more rain than perhaps traditionally, but it was the same story last year. You want a horse that can be good enough to win an arc, but you've also got to handle the conditions. And I think that's part of the game. You know, Tanawa could go to America and win the Breeders' Cup, and the conditions there will suit. You know, conditions are just a part of the game and a part of why I suppose racing is so appealing to us, because it's something else to think about, something else to add into the equation. And I think on the day, the horse that handled the conditions best won the race. The best horse in the race? No, I would actually think that was Tanawa. I really interesting to hear what DJ was just saying there about the sort of ground. That's something I'm going to watch the replays of and have a look at that. And I'd actually recommend to any listeners to do that, because it's a really interesting point. I felt just watching the race, it was quite steady. Steadily run, and Adea went quite early, I thought. And it was sort of, you're watching the race thinking, crikey, is he going to do something quite special here? Is he going to kick off and just go miles clear? And eventually he was sort of drew back. And I just wonder whether seeing Adea sort of go at that point, the others sort of got a bit earlier into the race when they wouldn't have wanted to. And that as such has allowed a horse that really stays on well to actually catch them at the end. Because as you sort of mentioned there, the sectional suggests that Tanawa and Hurricane Lane had the quickest sectionals, but it was that final sort of few yards where it was the horse that was staying on strongest won the race. So yeah, I suppose that's the only sort of question I have. I would say Tanawa was the best horse in the race. I would hope she goes to America, because my, she's been an incredible horse. You know, she can do it. You know, she put up a fight in the Irish Champion Stakes. She's gone to America and won and could go well. And she's finished second on an arc in really heavy ground, and won on the day last year on even more testing ground. So, yeah, a really, really interesting race, but definitely a strong one. And I suppose the only thing I'd sort of add on that as well is I thought it was disappointing not to see the Japanese horse Chronogenesis go closer. I mean, I just think it's the ground, and you know, I just think that's the sort of key factor to those horses coming over. And I suppose the key thing to remember is we talk about the ground and how that comes into it. If the ground was always good at the arc, we probably would have a Japanese winner. So that's the appeal of the arc. It's a unique race. I think it's the best race in the world. And yeah, what a way to have 100 years of it. It was a thrilling race, and very well done on getting the winner, Maddie.
Thank you very much, James.
Maddie, what do you think? You obviously backed the winner. What do you think? Do you think the best horse won the arc?
If you ran the race on good ground, I accept you'd probably get a different result. But what I would say is I think this horse, a lot of people looked at him and discarded him because they weren't familiar with his form and the way he'd been racing. But his form has actually been working out, and I think he's better than Alpinista. And Alpinista beat him in Germany. And I think this horse hadn't shown anything like what he was truly capable of. And I thought these conditions, as you guys have touched on, were perfect, were absolutely perfect. I thought it was a brilliant ride. He had him positioned perfectly, and the horse just kicked into turbo. I think he'd stay a mile and six, no problem. Do I think he is the best horse? If you ran the race again in the same conditions, maybe. If you ran the race again in different conditions, probably not. And I do just want to highlight, both of you there have touched upon tactics and sectionals. Do check out our big race analysis from Ron Wood, which is now free on the Racing Post website. There's all the analysis, all the in-depth knowledge from Ron there. So give that a look. It's really is unmissable. DJ, just before we move on, I want to ask you in particular, knowing Dermot Weld, knowing Tanawa, and obviously being such a big fan of the Godolphin horses, what would you do next year? Where would you aim them at next year if they do all stay in training, as you've said?
I would be surprised if Tanawa stayed in training. I think this was our one big shot at the Ark. You know, she's a 5-year-old mare, and this was it. This was the day. And just the impression I got, I was out with Dermot for a big read a couple of weeks ago before the Irish Champion Stakes, and the impression I got was this was her date with destiny. Irish Champion Stakes, great, fantastic. If she wins it, magic. But it's all about Longchamp. It's all about the first Sunday in October. And I would say she'll run in the Breeders' Cup, the race she won last year, the Turf. And I'd imagine if she won that, I wouldn't be surprised if she was retired afterwards. I have no idea, but I'd imagine that would be the most likely scenario. As regards the other two, I just think, like, Adyar, like, he just run in all the top races. I'd imagine you'll see Adyar certainly back in the Ark next year and Hurricane Lane. Like, they've so many options where they can split them up. Like, you know, there's certainly for Adyar or Hurricane Lane, there are, like, you look at the 3-year-olds this year and you say to yourself, are any of the other 3-year-olds going to progress past them? I certainly don't think so. Then you look at the 2-year-old division, which we don't know a whole deal about yet. Obviously, you know, Godolphin have the star of the show that's going to be favoured as a Dewhurst. But I just think both those horses could progress further next year. And I think Adyar in particular, just the way the Ark was run, I could definitely see Adyar coming back and defending his King George crown. I wouldn't be surprised if he won it again.
Okay, bold shout then from DJ on Adyar. He clearly has a lot of confidence in him. And wise to mention Native Trail as well, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. Godolphin have had such a magical season, haven't they? Haven't mentioned the connections of Torquato Tasso, René Pichelec and Marcel Weiss. Incredible story there with both of them, really. The trainer, not been training for very long and had this horse and really believed in him. And equally the jockey, his first ride in the Ark. So well done to them. Let's move on to the Prix de l'Abbé then. That was a race which went the way of the Irish trained, A Case of You. It was the first Group 1 for Aidan McGuinness. DJ, you know him quite well by the sounds of it, and you couldn't be more delighted for him. Tell us why.
Yeah, I'd say if you could ask everybody that has anything to do with Irish racing, if you could pick a trainer and a jockey, write down your top, you know, 10 trainers and jockeys in Ireland. I'd say most people that answer the question would have both Rona Whelan and Aidan McGuinness in their top 3. They're just really nice guys that, like, just completely normal, you know, chat away to you and just good guys in the game. And for the two of those to team up with A Case of You, it's just a terrific story, really. And A Case of You is a horse that started off with John McConnell and went to Aidan McGuinness after winning the Group 3 at the Curragh last October. And it's been a kind of a, I wouldn't say a stop-start season with A Case of You, but I imagine his primary objective earlier on the season was the Commonwealth Cup, and he ran terribly in that. He only beat a couple home. But since then, he's kind of got his consistency back. He was a little bit disappointing. He wasn't disappointing at all. He was just beaten in the Flying Five by Romantic Proposal. And the funny thing about that was his first try over five. And I think it kind of made a man of him. And I think it taught him how to learn how to sprint properly. And it was just remarkable, the ground he made up in the closing stages. Like, it looked all over. That Air de Valse looked home and hose. Like, to be 3 lengths clear, probably, you know, 200 yards from the line. And then for A Case of You, who I didn't even think got up passing the line, I thought it was a remarkable performance by A Case of You. And, you know, a cut on the ground, I'd imagine he'll go for the champion sprint now at Ascot. Because he does like cutting the ground. He stays 6 fine. And you'd imagine that would be the natural place for him to go. But a terrific story. A few disappointments in the race. I thought Sueza was a bit disappointing. And Winter Power, again, hasn't really finished her season that strongly. Romantic Proposal was a bit disappointing as well. So a few disappointments in the race. But as regards a kind of a feel-good, heartwarming story, Aidan McGuinness and Ronan Whelan, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant to see.
Yes, and Glass Slippers back in third behind Air de Valse. So that does give some substance to the form. I thought it was great to see Mo Salita in fourth for Adrian Nichols. And as you say, Sways of the 5-2 favourite back in fifth. James, would this be form you'd want to be relying on going forward to races like the British Champion Sprint and indeed next year?
Yes, I didn't actually wasn't aware that they were looking at Ascot, and it'd be interesting if they did. I mean, I'm fascinated by their source. I mean, there can't be many 5 furlong winners that start on over a mile on soft or heavy ground that end up sort of winning an Abbey, but credit to Connections, because he just seems to be, I think he has been progressive in his own sort of peculiar way. You know, we often sort of see the form book, and there's two big sort of poor runs in there, Ascot and sort of when he was well beaten over 7 at the start of the season. But what he has done every time is just take a little bit of a step forward since, I suppose, that performance at Ascot. I don't know how strong this 5 furlong division is, and it's really nice to hear the Connections after the race talking about races like Dubai, talking about, you know, Breeders' Cup, I know, is a potential option for this horse. And that's very exciting for these sort of Connections. I think this is a horse that might be sort of developing as he gets into a 4-year-old. I quite like 3-year-old sprints at the end of a season peaking and then going into that 4-year-old season. And I would say he's definitely going to be one that's going to be in around all those good races. You know, we always talk about Patash and how brilliant he was, but there is a little bit of a sort of uncertainty around that division at the moment. You know, Swasa was sort of almost suddenly appearing as the one to beat, but we've seen a couple of defeats for that horse, and yeah, perhaps the ground wasn't right, but it doesn't look as sort of invincible and unstoppable as she did at Goodwood. So I think this is going to be a horse that's going to be a serious player next year. And I saw this morning on Twitter his owner carrying the trophy as he was going on his flight. It brings back all the glory of Group One racing if you're carrying the trophy in your hand luggage. But yeah, a remarkable story, and it's good to see some new Connections enjoying a top level breakthrough.
Yeah, very much so. Thrilling race. As you say, Air Devals broke clear and appeared to be all over. But Ronan Whelan, he knew where the finishing line was, and so did A Case of You. Let's move on then to the Qatar Prix de la Forêt. And it was won in devastating fashion by Space Blues, confidently ridden by William Buick. DJ, do you think this horse could be one of the most underrated, or not underrated, maybe underappreciated horses in training? I do.
Yeah, he could be. I absolutely love him. I'd love him to have a crack at the Breeders' Cup Mile, and I think he'd have every chance in it. It's funny, like, you think of Space Blues now, and you just think of pure and utter speed, like, absolutely, that turn of foot. And then you remember that he made his debut when he won a Nottingham Maiden over a mile with Cutting the Ground. And then he actually ran over a mile too next time at Newbury behind King Otakar. So, like, early on in his career, they actually thought he was going to be a middle-distance horse. And It's just gas to see his progression. And I honestly thought going into, I was on the postcast on Friday and looking at the weekend's action. And I just thought 7 furlongs with him going into the race on the back of an impressive win at York. I just thought Space Blues is going to be extremely hard to beat. And his SP, I suppose, enhances your point, Maddie, that he is a little bit underappreciated, because I thought he was a 6-4 shot. And he went off bigger than 3-1. He went off 18-5. And if you go through his last two seasons, there's been only, you know, 2 minor blips in there. And to be honest, I thought when you look back again at the Lennox Stakes, I thought he was the best horse in the race. He was back from a break. And, you know, the race wasn't run to suit at all when he was beaten by Kinross. But you take that out, and you take where he'd valid excuses in the Alcoz sprint at Maidan. Like, he's basically been unbeaten for the last 2 seasons. He's a hell of a horse. I'd love to see him have a crack at a mile. Like, he hasn't ran over a mile in a very, very long time. I think you have to go back to April 2019, the last time he ran over a mile. I think where his speed can really be used to its best effect at Del Mar, that tight turn, that turn of foot, if the gaps come, I think he's going to be the one finishing. And yeah, I really hope to give him a crack at it, because he's been an incredible horse, and I think he deserves a crowning moment, and I think it might just be in the Breeders' Cup.
I would be hard pressed to disagree with you on that. I think I'm a big Space Blues fan as well. James, I mean, I think this horse could easily have won a couple more Group 1s if things had panned his way. Are you quite as sort of encouraged by what you've seen as me and DJ?
Yeah, I'd have to say so as well. I mean, the way, you know, I was looking back through this sort of horse's season, they went to Saudi, won a massive pot with him there, and he was a sort of silly price in a conditions race, one of those races where they just want some sort of big runners, I'm sure. They went over six at in Dubai, and he really just didn't look himself. And that was, I suppose, the turning point. I think they were sort of wondering whether he could just be one to take on those sort of wealth of sort of Group One races, probably going back to Deauville in August, the race he won so well last year. But he's back at seven furlongs, and this is a real trip that I think we sometimes underestimate a little bit. You know, you sort of see a good miler drop back, but it is a specialist division in its own sort of sort. You know, we say it about five, we say it about six. I think to an extent we say it about a mile, but seven is a division by itself. And the way this horse won on Sunday was an extreme example of a horse just absolutely thriving. You know, he travelled into the race so much better. And when they asked him to go, he went. Goat, I don't know what that word means, but anyway, I suppose the interesting thing about the way he did pick up was the ground. You know, we talked a bit about it early in the day and how sort of testing it was for him to pick up like that shows he's really got a bit of stamina there. So a Breeders' Cup mile would be absolutely fine for him. You know, it's probably of a mile race, if he is going to win a Group One mile race, Del Mar is probably the place where he's going to do it. Yeah, I mean, I suppose you mentioned the crowning sort of day. I mean, I find it really sad, the seven furlong division, because you've got a horse here who's very, very talented, and he's winning Group Twos all the time, you know. The only Group One he wins is at the end of Arc Day and the Foray, and, you know, it's not even on ITV. God, I wish they'd just make one in Britain. I wish one of them would be. I think the Hungerford would be the best one, you know. I think we deserve it because the Foray is pinned at the end of Arc Day. It'd be a shame. It'd be a shame if we don't ever have a Group One in Britain over seven furlongs, because I think, well, for three rolls and upwards, as I think it's a good opportunity, and a horse like Space Bruise deserves that chance to win at the top level and in his home country.
Yeah, it was the second Group One for him. Of course, he won the Prix Maurice de Guise last year, but as you say, that was in France as well, so perhaps not quite got the recognition closer to home. DJ Space Blues, I want to touch upon James' point about the ground though. How do you think horses like Alpinista, who obviously had beaten Torquato Tasso, and Wonderful Tonight, who had some form tied closely in with some of the key protagonists, how do you think they would have done? And do you think that we're going to see more and more heavy ground arcs now? Because back in the day, I used to get very testing ground, but it seems like it's definitely more of a trend recently.
Yeah, two things here. First of all, I'm scared to say anything negative about Wonderful Tonight because I know you're absolutely in love with her.
Not at all.
Wonderful Tonight, I think, is a really, really good filly. And, you know, if she ran in the race, I think she would have ran quite well. And to be honest, obviously, beforehand, I would have said she would have beaten the winner. But whether she's good enough to win an arc, I just don't think so. I think she's... You know, she's rated 117 and that's her, I think. But, you know, hopefully she'll come back and prove me different. But yeah, as regards the ground, like, if the arc was Saturday, obviously the ground would have been completely different. And if the arc was Friday, it would have been completely different. It's just, I think, for the last 2 years in a row, we've just got this torrential rain within the 24 hours, 48 hours before the arc. And obviously that can happen at this time of year. So you're always open to that deluge. And it's just unfortunate that it arrived when it did. And, you know, it might obviously tempt more people to have a crack at it with horses that they mightn't think are arc horses, because it'll give that winner on Sunday will give other people hope, thinking, you know, we could win an arc with something that we don't quite think is an arc horse, because you think an arc winner is the best of the best. The winner on Sunday, I don't think, is the best of the best. So it will give people hope. It will maybe... you know, make them think again if they're thinking about a certain route next autumn. But as I said, if the arc was ran 24, 48 hours earlier, it would have been ran on completely different ground. So I think it's very hard to say definitely it's going to be heavy ground every year.
Yeah, I think that would be a bit of a blanket generalisation, wouldn't it? But it certainly seems like a while since we've had a good ground arc anyway. Maybe I'm getting carried away there. We're going to take a quick pause now, but don't go anywhere, because we're going to discuss the rest of the action from Longchamp, including good old Stradivarius. What about him on Saturday? Will we see him on a race course again?
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. We've talked about three of the Group 1 races from Longchamp on Sunday. Now let's tackle the rest. David's already mentioned the Prix de l'Opera, which was won by Rougier, beating Grand Glory in a bombing finish. What was your main takeout from that race, DJ?
Oh, my main takeout was Adaria. God, she travelled like a dream. Like, it was just, I'd say, Ortiz Mendizabal was just saying to himself, I can't believe this. Like, we're two furlongs out in the Prix de l'Opera, and I'm absolutely tanking here. Like, it's just press the button, just press the button, and I just go and win. And then he does. And, like, I'm trying to figure out whether it was a case of her not quickening, whether it was the ground, whether the way the race was ran and the way she tracked the leader into the straight didn't suit. But I just keep coming back to the same thing in thinking that she was racing on the worst of the ground. And I just thought the way she travelled, like, it just, like, she poked your eye out. Like, I don't even think the commentator realised just how well she was travelling. And in fairness, he was right in the end. But, like, I thought, given the way she travelled, she could even be worth a shot over a mile, because her ability to travel in a race like that, a Group One, like, I know she, I don't think she's ran over a mile since maybe early on last season, but I certainly think she's worth a crack at it, because I think she's got a wicked turn of foot. And yeah, I think it just probably stretched her stamina a little bit in the final kind of, you know, 100, 200 yards on Sunday. But yeah, bring her back to a mile, a strongly run mile where she gets a bit of cover. I think she could be a bit of a weapon.
And Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Turf all over again. Has she got it won already, do you think?
Yeah, well, I suppose it depends on what shows up. But yeah, she's certainly got a cracking chance in it. Like, she looks every, to me anyway, she looks every bit as good as what she showed in that. I thought it was interesting that Dermot Wells said after the race that, you know, Tarnawa wasn't certain to go for the turf, that she could go for the Filly Mares. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. And, like, it could potentially be a decent race. I don't know what they're going to do with, like, the likes of Snowfall and that. But you've got that warlike goddess in there as well. So it could potentially be an interesting race. But Odaria, if she goes there, she's certainly got a big chance. And I think the way she travels around those tight turns, I think she's, that could be a real asset.
Yeah, it certainly makes sense with her turn of foot, doesn't it, James? What about the two-year-old races? We had the Primus Marcel Boussac, won by Zelly, and also the Qatar Prix Jean-Luc Lagardère, won by Angel Blur under Frankie Dettori, who didn't have a ride in the arc in the end.
Yeah, I think possibly the same as last year. I think the stronger of the two-year-old races will come this week at Newmarket. But I think that said, we need to take them seriously, because they are top-level races. Nonetheless, I thought that the rider Frankie gave on Angel Blur was superb. I thought there was a really good pace set by Noble Truth. And to be honest with you, I think that race might turn out to be a particularly strong one. It might just be that the winner particularly handled the ground better than the second. And the third, who was also pretty eye-catching, again, probably didn't handle conditions. Noble Truth, it's got quite an interesting pedigree. You know, it's interesting reading Charlie Appleby's pre-race comments. He was saying, this horse is just going to go out there and try and gallop. And in fairness, he did. You know, you look at his pedigree, Kingman, out of a Frankel mare, cost 1.1 million, I think, or million guineas. It's going to be a proper horse over a middle distance next year, maybe start sort of a mile two, and maybe the classic trial they used with Adia. Interesting horse. And in terms of the Boussac, the race sort of was a bit disappointing after the favourite went out, and it'll be interesting to see if she's supplemented for the Phillies mile next week, or this week even. Zelly, though, she was good enough. She sort of came from a nice position, was the only one to sort of break DJ's rule on where they were coming from. But yeah, again, given that Times Square, who had shown pretty weak level of form compared to some of them, was second, suggests that the ground was the key factor in that race.
Yeah. Just to make my point, I actually do think it was the best of the ground earlier on in the day on the rail, but I just wonder after those two races, I just wonder, because it was so heavy, did it just cut up really quickly and therefore make it slower for the rest of the card? But as I said, like, this is just one of my mad theories. It mightn't even be true. Like,
I've
read someone else saying similar, DJ, so I don't think you're the only one. I think
okay, good. God, I hope that person is is very, very clever.
I think it makes sense, certainly, anyway. Let's talk about another of the group ones, this time closer to home. The Kingdom of Bahrain Sun Chariot was won in dominant style by Saffron Beach. She reversed 1,000 guineas form with Mother Earth, who was sent off the 11-4 favourite. William Buick riding for Jane Chappell-Heim, another first group one for a trainer that we're going to talk about this weekend. And she didn't really have to break sweat, James.
No, she didn't, Maddie, to be fair. I think it's a classic case of how a confidence boost can make a difference for a horse. She came into the season as one of the most exciting sort of fillies prospects from a lesser known yard, I suppose, who have horses at the very top level. Ran very well at Newmarket and Elgin and trial, wasn't beaten far in the guineas itself. And then I suppose the season didn't quite turn out the way they wanted. She didn't sort of stay a mile and a half at Epsom in the Oaks and then went to the Falmouth, albeit in a really, really good race, and I suppose massively disappointed. They dropped her to group three level at Sandown, not notoriously a strong group three, and she won really, really impressively, looking like that horse who had finished second in the guineas early in the season. And I think that confidence boost has made the difference for this horse massively. And I think also the fact that she hasn't been, you know, too heavily campaigned. She's, you know, she didn't go to Ireland, I suppose, to contest the Irish guineas when that was sort of discussed. And a horse like Mother Earth, who's been sort of over to France once or twice, I think twice actually, ran in the guineas, of course, and ran well there, and ran in the Falmouth. She's been on the go for a bit. So it could just be this horse who's sort of been a bit lightly campaigned with that confidence boost has made the difference. And also, I think this is a key point to remember. This was a horse who also ran her best form and ran twice in late last season. So she might just be one who's going to flourish at the end of her seasons, which is sort of an interesting aspect to look at and to look in your punting ways going forward for champion stakes and the like, because some horses do just flourish near the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And Jane Chappell-Heim, she's always ambitious, not afraid to travel. So perhaps she could stay in training or indeed go to the Breeders' Cup as well. DJ, question for you, and not an easy one to answer, but who do you think comes out on top of these three-year-old fillies? Because they've been a bit of a mixed bunch, haven't they? Snow Lantern had her day, Alcohol Freeze had several days, Mother Earth is just very tough and consistent. Where do you rank them?
I think they're not a great bunch, to be honest, Maddie. And I think on Saturday we saw Saffron Beach coming out to be the best of a Midland lot, to be honest with you. Like Mother Earth is a lovely filly, like lovely, and you have to say, you know, she's been remarkable all season, but she's not exceptional, and she's been the story of the season almost. You know, she's a guineas winner. She's a guineas winner. She's been placed in so many classics. She won the pre-Rothschild, and I would say Aidan has been surprised at how well she's done, because I think, you know, she's obviously got a great attitude and there's a lot to like about her, but she's nothing special. And I think Saffron Beach called them all out on Saturday, to be honest with you, because I don't think any, like, Dream Loper was third rate 108, Epona Plays was fourth rate 109, Fevrover was fifth rate 108, No Speak Alexander won a group one, but, you know, we all saw what happened in the Matron and it was a mess of a race. Like, these fillies, you just wonder, is there a good crop of fillies around at the moment? Obviously, Tana was the best of them. Snowfall was a little bit disappointing in the arc, and it was just her finishing effort, really, because she travelled really well. She hammered, you know, all of the, like, a lot of the decent three-year-old fillies in the Oaks, and then again in the Yorkshire Oaks and in the Irish Oaks. So, I don't know. I just don't think there are that many really good three-year-old fillies around at the moment. And this race here, especially, it's a funny sort of race, the Sun Chariot, the time of the year that it comes around. And if you're on your game at this time of the year, like Saffron Beach was, you really can pick up the pieces. And, you know, she was brilliant. Never at any stage of the race did I think anything other than Saffron Beach was going to win. It was poetry in motion for Pricewise backers or anybody else that backed her. She was always going to win. She won by three lengths. I'd say she was probably value for even more than that. She was much the best, and fair play to Jane Chappell-Heim. She's got a really, really classy filly on her hands.
She has. Let's talk now about the Qatar Prix de Cadran, which came on Saturday, and it produced one of the mix-ups that we've waited all season long to see between Trushan and Stradivarius. The ground officially described as very soft in Trushan's favour, and he was set off the 8-5 favourite. This was described beforehand as one of the staying races of the season. We had Princess Zoe in there, Call the Wind, Aidan O'Brien even ran, Donica O'Brien even ran Emperor of the Sun, Willie Mullins represented by Stratum. We had plenty of others with great chances, including Princess Zoe, who won the race last year. What is going to happen now for Stradivarius, do you think, James? Because it was 4.5 lengths he was beaten by Trushan. What did you make of his finishing effort?
Yeah, it was sort of the race that we were sort of waiting for. And I guess we've seen it's been a frustrating wait to it until it finally arrived. I mean, I was sort of a little bit surprised that he sort of even ran, to be honest, because they were talking about the ground being so testing and so tough. And I remember sort of that real exciting time when he was going to take on Trushan at Goodwood, defending his Goodwood Cup, and it was soft, but it was a lot softer on Saturday, and I think it was at Goodwood. So it's even quite surprising that he turned up, but he did, and we had a good race. I thought Trushan is just an absolute real top-notch horse when he gets his conditions, and he had them. You know, he looks very, very tough to beat when the ground goes soft. With Stradivarius in mind, I don't think you can sort of look at the distance between them and say, how has Stradivarius run? Okay, he's not as dominant as he won before as he was before, but again, this is ground we know he doesn't like. He's a stayer who's a bit classy in the sense of he sort of travels and then he quickens away, almost a bit like Tanawa, a horse that sort of will travel into the race and sort of press the button and go. And on that ground, it doesn't really suit horses like that. It really sort of takes the sting out of him. You'd need to go back to sort of Doncaster and York to say, well, this horse has clearly looked as good as ever. Will we see him again? To be honest, from my perspective, I'd be surprised if we did see him next season. You know, he's 7 years old now. You know, he's done nothing wrong this season. He's had a good season. You know, okay, he was unlucky at Ascot, but he's shown that he's a remarkable horse. And I think he's shown as well that he is going to be a really nice sort of stallion to go with as well, because he has got that sort of staying power. He has got the ability to handle quite varying degrees of ground, albeit he might not be as good on soft ground and he might not be as fantastic as he is on better ground. But I think he's going to be a great stallion. And be really interested to see what his horses are going to be like in the years to come.
Yeah, I've been thinking that for a couple of years now, but he just keeps going, doesn't he? DJ, whenever a good horse comes to what we think might be the end of their career, there's always this debate, you know, if they're enjoying it, if they're still performing well, should they train on, or should they be retired the minute they suggest they aren't as good as they once were? Where do you stand on this sort of thing? And do you think it depends on that specific horse, or do you have a general thought on it?
Yeah, I think it depends on the specific horse, and I think we need to give the trainers credit here and give them credit for knowing what's best for the individual horse in question. Like, I know our colleague Chris Cook wrote a piece saying he thinks horses, when they reach a certain age, should be retired. And I completely disagree. He was talking about a horse called Cruise Linen for Gordon Elliott, and that horse won, like, back in March at 14 years of age and absolutely loving life. So I don't think you can actually, you know, say, oh, that horse has reached a certain age. When a horse, flat horse, gets to 7 or 8, has to be retired. When a jumps horse gets to 12 or 13, has to be retired. I certainly don't agree with that, because, you know, for all we know and for all we hope, is that they absolutely love what they're doing, and it's what they're bred to do. They're bred to race. That's what they get their kicks out of. And I think obviously Stradivarius, I'd imagine, will be retired now. I don't know, obviously, but he's a 7 year old. He's precious. He's been an incredible stayer. Like, and I think the thing about Stradivarius, he has been part of days that will live long in the memory. Like, I will never in all my life forget his Gold Cup win when he was the fourth leg of Frankie's four-timer, when we thought he might have the 6 in a row. Like, that day at Ascot, I have never, and it was even beyond the type of thing that you feel at Cheltenham. It was this disbelief. It was like Annie Power falling at the last, but it was a different type of, it was like, oh my God, this actually could happen. When he went to the front 2 out in the Britannia that day, the grandstand actually felt like it was vibrating. It looked like he was going to have the 5 in a row, and then obviously he was favoured for the last. But that day Stradivarius won the Gold Cup, I thought that was one of my favourite days racing. I just thought it was absolutely magical. So it was. And he got himself out of a hole. You know, things didn't go to plan. It looked at certain stages that he wasn't going to get a clear run. And then he was almost beat DXB snugly enough at the line. But that day for me was one of my most enjoyable days racing, when he was able to get himself out of a hole and win another Gold Cup. And he will go down as one of the great stayers, and deservedly so, because he's just been so consistent and always gives us true running. And if that was his last race, well, I think we have a glorious career to look back on.
We certainly do. And from the stayers and perhaps out with the old, into the new, let's talk about the big two-year-old race coming up this week in the Dewhurst. We'll have all the information for you on that race just after this.
Racing Post Members Club is the only subscription that includes access to the Racing Post digital newspaper every day from 9 p.m. plus exclusive premium content, including expert tips, analysis, form study tools, and more. As a listener of the Postcast, you can enter the code POSTCAST21, that's POSTCAST21, to get 50% off your first 3 months. Head to racingpost.com, click on subscribe, and choose Get Ultimate Monthly to get started. That's code POSTCAST21.
The 2:25 at Newmarket on Saturday is the Darley Dewhurst Stakes. It's a race with a really rich roll of honour. It's been won by many a superstar, and this year's renewal looks like it could be just as exciting. We have Native Trail, who's leading many of the markets at about 4-5. Bayside Boy, 100-30. Straight Answer for Jer Lyons, 5-1. 8-1 for Angel Blur, the Prix Jean-Luc Lagardère winner. Gundethun at 10-1. 16-1 for Dubawi Legend, and it's 20-1 bar. These races, they're all going to have an impact on the Trainers' Championship. And Charlie Appleby and Andrew Bolling, both well represented here. Do you think anything can touch Native Trail? What we saw at the Curragh last time, James, he put himself way above anything we'd seen so far this season. And the ratings suggest that it was a very good performance as well.
Yeah, it was. It was an outstanding performance. And I think he's going to go off a shorter price than most horses would in this sort of race. I mean, he was outstanding in Ireland. I mean, you watch it back, and we've seen some really good performances in the National Stakes in the past, and he was certainly up there. I mean, DJ knows more about Point Lonsdale than I do, but Ebro River was a Phoenix Stakes winner. He was a horse who then was pitched in at Group 1 Company this weekend. You know, he's a solid piece of form. And the two of them, and he was ahead of the two of them pretty easily and impressively. You know, a lot's going to be said about what will he do next season, but in the here and now, he's miles better than anything he's going to take on Saturday. I think he'll win. I mean, you mentioned sort of Andrew Balding. It'll be interesting to see Berkshire Shadow. I mean, I don't think he ran too badly in the Vintage Stakes behind Angel Blur, who's obviously a very, very good horse after what happened on Sunday. And I think he'd be worth another shot at 7 furlongs. And also, the ground was very soft that day. I'm not quite sure what the weather's going to be like this week. There's sort of talk of a heat wave in some parts of the country, which is quite bizarre. But if the ground isn't as testing, which I hope it won't be, I'd be interested to see what Berkshire Shadow will be like over 7 furlongs. It could be a good race. But yeah, I think Native Trail will be tough to beat.
You've got a mix of very precocious early types in here, and then some of the unexposed late bloomers, haven't you? Imperial Fight is a horse that I'm a big fan of. His form has been boosted. He's a 33-1 shot. Quite like the sound of that. DJ, before you no doubt absolutely rip into me for pronouncing the name of Aidan O'Brien's horse wrong, who do you fancy?
Glunthane. Yeah, I think it's Glunthane. Glunthane. I think that's how you pronounce it.
There we go.
Glunthane. Are you happy with that?
It is you. You'll know the horse better than I do, I'm sure.
Glunthane. It is, I think it's actually, I could be wrong here. My editor, Richard Forrestal, is from Cork, and I think it could potentially be a place in Cork that's on the coast, like Glunthane or Glunthane. I'm not entirely sure how you pronounce it, but this is interesting because this is quite similar to Tenebrism, who won the Cheveley Park, in that this horse ran back in April and met a setback and hasn't been seen since. And we thought the world was at his feet when he won on debut, because he beat Castle Star, and obviously that Castle Star form has worked out particularly well. So it's very hard to know what to make of Glunthane and how they're even going to price him up, to be honest with you, because that's going to be really tricky, because Aidan, I think, has only got one left in the race. A Straight Answer has been supplemented for Jer Lyons. this straight answer was seriously impressive last time in the list of Blenheim Stakes at Fairy House. Absolutely bolted up. Beat a 96 rated horse by 5.5 lengths. So it's interesting that Gerard supplemented straight answer. But like, I think there's some 5-6 available about Native Trail. Is that not the greatest 5-6 shot of all time? Like, this horse is rated 122 after his National Stakes win. To put that in perspective, when Too Darn Hot won this race in 2018, he was even money favourite, and he beat a Derby winner in Anthony Van Dyke in third. Advertising won the Commonwealth Cup the following season, as well. Too Darn Hot was rated 116 at the time. So Native Trail is already rated £6 higher than what Too Darn Hot was when he won what looked a really good renewal of the Dewhurst that year. So like, he will have to seriously underperform. The second favourite at the moment is rated £10 below him. So if that 5-6/even money is available anywhere on Monday evening or Tuesday evening, like, I just don't see how this horse is not 1-2 or 2-5. He is absolutely exceptional. He's the 1 2-year-old that stood out this season, and you've gone, whoa. In that final kind of 200 yards of the Curragh, you said to yourself, and his action was all over the place. He didn't really know what he was doing. He still looked like he was learning. William Buick was trying to teach him all the time. Charlie Appleby said afterwards, you know, that he hasn't been easy to train. And if you saw this horse working the other day, he said, you wouldn't be thinking he was going to win a National Stakes. But obviously, he's just getting to grips with it all the time. He's learning on the job. And I can't wait to see him run. I'm already excited about it. I think he's going to put up an explosive performance on Saturday. And I can guarantee you one thing, he won't be even money or 5-6.
Confidence from DJ there. Quite an interesting pedigree he's got, and a good one at that. By Oasis Dream, what would you see him up to next year? He's got to be a 2000 Guineas type, hasn't he?
Oh, he's a Guineas horse written all over him. Yeah, he shouldn't really, you know, get too much further than that. Like, he shouldn't. I think his dam is a sister, but I don't think she ran as a sister to a sprinter as well. So, and I think there's another Calyx is in there somewhere. I remember seeing before that the dam is related to Calyx, who was a sprinter as well. So you wouldn't think that Native Trail is going to get too much further. But given the way he finished in the National Stakes at the Curragh over that 7 furlongs, and given the way he won the superlative at Newmarket as well in the July course over 7, a mile next year, given like his physique, like he's going to fill out into that frame as well. So I think a mile would be perfect for him. And at this stage, it's very hard to see him not winning next year's 2000 Guineas.
That is a very bold claim indeed. Just before we move on to the weekly naps, DJ, I did enjoy your column about reading into what different trainers' little sayings mean and how we interpret them. When it comes to Aidan O'Brien and Ger Lyons, what gems of wisdom do you have for our listeners?
Yeah, no, Aidan is gas. Like, Aidan would say to you, you know, he's just ready to start back. He's just ready to start back. And you know deep down what it means. Like, it's like that the horse is not like 100% fit, but it kind of leaves a poser for punters, because you're going, right, he's not fully fit, but obviously he's trained in Ballydoyle, he's working with all these great horses, he's obviously done plenty to be running on the track. So you're kind of saying to yourself, right, he's not fully fit, but will his ability get him home? And it's just one of his sayings that he has, and you just, when he does say it, it just puts that nagging doubt in the back of your mind. He's just ready to start off. It kind of gives you the impression that like he won't be able to even keep up for a few furlongs, but deep down, you know, obviously he's going to be fine. So it'll be interesting with Clutane. But yeah, all the different trainers, when you speak to them for so long over the years, and you get to know the little things that you can just pick out and figure out when they say something to you, that you know obviously that they mightn't quite mean it, but they might mean something else. So it's just it was just a little bit on that. I was having a bit of fun with it, Maddie.
Indeed. And Ger Lyons, I think he's allergic to Royal Ascot. He doesn't like sending his horses there. But does this mean we've got to take it into consideration with straight answer that he you know, he supplemented him and he's actually running him at a British race course? So he must think quite a lot of him.
Yeah, it was obviously a little bit of a disappointing day for Ger at Newmarket last week when, you know, he went there, I'd say he thought with two decent chances. You know, Dr. Zenf was very disappointing in the Middle Park, and the filly was disappointing in the Sheepley Park as well. So he went there with two good two-year-olds. But the fact that he's willing to have a crack at this Dewhurst with straight answer is interesting. Like, I thought straight answer at Fairy House looked real professional. He's made the run on a couple of occasions now, and he just looks real kind of professional and real powerful. Like, at no stage of Fairy House, when he turned in that day in the Blenheim, He never looked like being caught. And the further he went, the better he looked. And he looked like he was a Guineas horse. So I'd say Jarrah's just willing to test him against the best, which is Native Trail, and seeing what he's got. So it's probably a shot to nothing, really. I'd say Straight Answer is very good. And to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised. I don't think there's any betting since the dozen forfeits came through. But I wouldn't be surprised if Straight Answer was second favourite, because he's that unknown quantity that you just don't know how good he is. But it'll be interesting to see. But I can't imagine he'll beat Native Trail.
Okay, we're going to give James a chance to get a word in edgeways after that. James, who is your best bet this week?
Well, Maddie, I'm sure you can imagine how full of delight I am to see Chepstow return with the Persian War Meeting for 2 days this week.
Right there with you, James.
It's set to be a cracker, actually. There's some really good horses entered up. No surprise, Mr. Paul Nichols is not holding back on the entries. He seems to be very, very strongly represented. He could very easily have a fair few winners, as he did last year. In terms of my best bet, it's also nice to have Exeter back in action on Thursday. I've always been quite a big fan of Ask a Honeybee. I've always sort of thought this would be a horse who would improve for going chasing. He's in a novice handicap chase at 4:15. He was beaten at the track last year, but to be honest, the way the race ran didn't suit him at all. And the horse had beaten Bob Hope or No Hope for Kim Bailey. He's gone on and been pretty useful since. Finished last year of a win. I think this horse is made for chasing. He won a point to point before he joined Fergo O'Brien. I think he's going to be a nice horse for chasing this year. It looks a good race, but I don't know how many of them will turn up. So I think he'll be one that could be worth following.
Okay, and DJ, you're expecting an explosive performance from Native Trail in the Darley Dewhurst Stakes, but who's going to win between now and then?
I'm going to go for the Persian War, Maddie, if that's all right. I just thought this horse was an ideal candidate for it for the last couple of weeks, and I'm glad to see him enter. I thought Paso Doble for Paul Nichols, I thought would be quite hard to beat in this. 4-year-old, obviously a second season juvenile, and it can be quite hard for him. But I just thought last time at Kempton, we saw him at the start of May, and I thought it was an interesting that Paul Nichols chose to bring him out so quickly and get that win under his belt. I thought from the last to the line was really impressive. He beat Bombix, who's rated 122. Flinter Sacra, the very disappointing Flinter Sacra, was in there. He only finished fourth. But, you know, I just thought it was a performance that had a bit of substance to it. I thought for that time of year, it was quite a decent race. He was sent off odds on. He made a few jumping errors. But, you know, Paul, like, he went from Jim Bulger to Nichols. And I'd say Nichols, with a summer under his belt, will get this horse jumping really well. And a long home straight at Chepstow could really, really suit Paso Doble, I think. So I think he's already rated 129. He'll be getting a little bit away from the older horses. And I hope he runs. And if he does, I think he'll win. So Paso Doble for me. It's a 2:45 at Chepstow on Friday.
Okay, thanks to DJ and thanks to James. That's this week's wrap, but we've reviewed all of the action. Who will we be talking about this time next week? Make sure to let us know. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.